and welcome into the Facts Not Feelings podcast, powered by BZ Consultants Group, with your host, Brooke Furness. Each week, I sit down with experts in the respected fields as we discuss how we can move this wonderful automotive industry forward by differentiating facts from feelings. Our conversation explores how my guests got to where they are today and how they achieve success. All right, let's jump in. In a world where every independent dealership is vying for, you got it, your attention, how does one cut through the noise to make a lasting impression? Today on Facts Not Feelings, we are diving into the art and the science of automotive marketing with the one and only Ashley DeBoer, Vice President and Partner at MIT Motors, which is one hell of a title. I'm all for this title, by the way. Girl power, I love it so much. She has mastered her craft in this area, and we're going to be exploring the dynamic strategies and the bold decision to elevate that are elevating MIT Motors above the competition. So tune in to discover how authenticity and innovation and branding can revolutionize your business approach directly from the industry's frontline leader. Ashley, welcome into the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really exciting to be here.
And I do want to tell the quick story before I dive into the heart of this, of the conversation here. Mm-hmm. We just met through the podcast, and I get a message on LinkedIn. I was like, you get a lot of messages on LinkedIn, and like half the time, more than that, probably 90% of the time, I don't look at them because it's like, hey, I can sell you on this. I can sell you on this. I'm like, unless it's someone I know. And I'm like, wait a second. This is legit. Like, this is so I'm so glad that you reached out to me and we could have this conversation today. And especially from your viewpoint, there's a lot of obviously OEM dealers out there, but from an independent dealership, I am so excited for this conversation today.
Yeah, absolutely. And the research I'm constantly trying to find and looking up, there is a very niche market for independent dealerships, and with the marketing and creating the budget and everything. So when I found your podcast that was really driving the automotive industry forward, I was looking at the AI trends that you were talking about, just different ways for sales, leadership components too. It's all been super helpful for me. So when I reached out to you, I was kind of a little bit starstruck, but it's been like, no, I'm a professional in the industry too. Like, I'm driving this forward. So I was glad that we got to connect.
Me too. Like, looking back, I was like, man, it just took me a little too long to get back to. So I apologize about that. But I'm like, thank you for sticking with me and the understanding of, you know, it just took a little bit. It went to the other pay. Yeah. But I'm just so glad that you reached out. This is going to be a great conversation. Like I said, anyone, even if you're on the OEM side and you're marketing, this is still a conversation for you, but there's a unique perspective coming from you, Ashley. And so let's just jump into this bad boy and just talk about, I'll say the basics. Some more times I don't like that word, because it's like, get back to basics, and that's a whole other conversation itself. But how do you define the role of branding in an independent dealership like MIT Motors?
So honestly, that has been the most important lesson that I found across the board. So with the branding component, when I came into the company about 4.5 years ago, 5 years ago now, all they had was a logo and a mission statement. And it was a grand mission statement to create a no-hassle experience. So I was like, okay, this is great, but how do we get this to translate from just branding to go through the marketing into the sales? So really what we really wanted to create was this experience that it wasn't so much just a transactional relationship that we had with our customers and our community. We wanted to take our brand and make it alive, basically, that they could feel that brand going through how we were marketing, listing our vehicles, how we serviced them. But then also when they got to our showroom, they saw that this isn't the typical independent dealership that's just throwing things on the front line and hoping they don't break down by the time they get to 41. So really taking that to heart and having this vision that we so heartedly believed in from a branding component, it made it a lot easier to build out all the different sectors of our business and really break through that noise and have a reputation that is exactly what our brand, the overarching picture, is to be. We want to be the best. We want to have a no-hassle experience. We want to have customers who come to us again and again. But in order to get there, you actually have to have it go throughout the entire process. So it's looking at how you're marketing, how you're communicating, what kind of PR are you putting out there? So there's a lot of questions that you should be asking when you're looking at your brand. It's not just, this is the logo I'm going with, this is a good slogan. It's something that you can inspire, like a shared vision to achieve as an organization.
And there's so many things to just unpack there for a hot second. when you're an OEM dealer and you have a bunch of, it's a word that drives me bonkers, but co-op money that you're trying to spend, and we're trying to do this. And it's like, the world is your oyster. What do you want to use? Like, what website provider do you want to use? Which chat? I mean, you have so many options to be able to narrow that down and be like, man, there's really, I can do. It's almost like analysis by paralysis. Like, there's so much information coming at you. And oddly enough, I was, by the time this airs, this will not be the same date, but my birthday was this past weekend, and I had some friends in town, and we were at a Goose Island brewery, and there was just this incredible, I'll call it a logo, but it was like a family seal. It was so freaking cool. And we're and my buddy goes, now that's a logo. Like, I go, wait a second. Are you saying you don't like my little BZ logo? Like, what are we doing here? Like, come on. But to the point of like, hey, that is marketing at its finest. I know what I'm trying to do. There's like hidden things inside of it, and really telling the story with just, like I said, it's a logo, but it was so much more than that. And really, like I said, just having so much, you look at some of the other things that are like, okay, that's a good logo. And when you see those really cool logos, it does strike something, but there's been so much thought beforehand to say, this is the story it's going to tell. This is the branding. Cause once again, going back to the other side of this is OEM was going to tell you a lot of times, like you have to say these words, you got to do this, you got to do, and there's nothing wrong with that. But as an independent now, it's like, oh, well, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. And taking that and telling your whole story, which is, it's got to be a little exhilarating times to be like, hey, I can start from scratch and do whatever the hell I want to do.
Yep. And it can also be really intimidating. So like, I talk to a lot of people that operate in the new car industry, and they just have a way different way of perceiving how they're listing vehicles, how they're marketing, what sites they're using. So with me, I'm like, okay, there's great information out there, but starting 4.5 years ago, we had the tiniest budget. They were still doing things extremely backwards, just a couple of pictures. So when I came in, and it was now like, well, what do you want to do to really make this, turn it from a wholesale operation to an independent dealership? So there was a lot that I had to learn very, very quickly, but I learned that harnessing other people's skill sets, like I was a single person, I'm not going to be able to do all the SEO, all the Google research, all of that type of stuff. So I really just started leaning on different mentors and programs to like really learn those skills to then be able to be in this industry and be competitive too, because you're competing with somebody who has a much bigger budget than you. So how do you break through that noise? That's always been at the forefront of all our discussions. And we really think that the Google reviews and personalizing the independent dealership component has been super successful for us, because we're also selling me, we're selling the owner, we're selling our entire experience. So yes, we might not be an OEM or we might not be a new car dealership, but we have to be able to give them a convincing enough story to really put their trust in us, which is, that's all it is at the end of the day.
You are so correct in all that. It is. There's so much coming at you, like I said. And with that, to what you said as well, is that, man, it can be a little daunting, because not only do you have so many options, you do not have the same budget as the new car dealership. So I love that perspective there. And before we go to this next question, you and I were talking beforehand. I'm glad that you brought it up. Like, you've been in the industry for four and a half years, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Perfect. And to come into that point of 2020, like that is being drinking from a fire hose, because it's been so volatile. How has that been? Before we go to the next question, I just want to, because there's a lot of people that watch the show that have been in the industry for a long time, but having that perspective as well, coming in at 2020 and taking over this role.
Yeah. So January of 2020, I just moved back home from living on some islands in the Caribbean, come back home, and my stepdad has been in the industry forever and is like, hey, come work for me for a couple of months. Help me figure out, like, our data clerk is not really working out. Help me with like maybe some marketing, kind of give us some pointers, because I was getting my MBA at the time. And they were like, okay, come on in. So then March rolls around and everything shuts down. So our entire operation was to sell maybe 5 to 10 cars retail and then do 50 wholesale units. That was their business model prior to COVID. And then when that happened, everything shut down. we had these detailers that didn't have work. We had nothing, and we had to either turn on a switch to either stay viable or we needed to shut our doors. So I really quickly had to figure out, well, what's our budget? What does it take to sell each car? How are we going to sell these cars? And how do we build up a reputation that we are a car dealership to compete in? We're in Southwest Florida, so there are so many car dealerships across the United States, but Southwest Florida primarily, it's just, especially in convertibles and just commercial vans. So we really decided to pick our niche to really focus on selling convertibles. And we turned on a new business model, and we really quickly saw the importance of doing Google reviews and getting reviews and asking for referrals. So we were really, this is either going to work or it's not going to work. So we had every incentive to make it happen, keep our employees happy. So there was basically only three of us at the time, and we've now turned it into a huge, a very large independent dealership that has customers again and again every day calling in. And a lot of that had to do from the almost like grassroots approach to getting customers, of like getting involved in our community, reaching out to people who have knew about us, and then also giving them a good service and the referral component, but then trying to figure out a pricing structure that actually works on third-party sites and email campaigns and all of that. I had no idea how to do any of that and figured it out. And I'm telling you, the biggest success that I've found is the email campaigns. Learning how to use the CRM tools super well, and then being able to keep all of our customers kind of separated into correct categories. Our email campaigns have given me the largest return on investment overall for my time, money. Yeah. And I only started doing that about a year and a half ago, and I wish I would have done it 4 years ago, but hindsight, that was 2020.
So you mentioned CRM there, and I that brings up another question, because once again, when you're on the news side, you have like, we'll say three options. Like, you don't have a lot of options. Right. Being who you are in your space, once again, you got lots of options. So, and the data coming in, if it's like a Salesforce or a HubSpot, it's going to be a hell of a lot better, which means you can hook up MailChimp or Constant Contact, all these different things that are just going to flow in so much better. So are you using like a Salesforce or a HubSpot?
So we actually, about 3.5 years ago, we decided to go with eLead. Okay. So we went through the CDK, and that's really the only tool that we're using. And now that we are 3.5 years in, we were talking about this before, it is the last thing I want to change. I don't want to change my inventory system or my CRM tool. So we use that, but I've been able to kind of export and have more control over those leads by using like Constant Contact and MailChimp to then send out campaigns to them, which has been really beneficial, because I'm able to stay in contact with just our business customers or just our previous customers. And it's been a very useful tool to actually be able to go back and kind of track when people are opening them. And then after the fifth email, they finally call in and they buy. So that's been a really cool tool for me to use, because we're never going to be the cheapest. Like, with all the noise that's going on to break through in the automotive industry, we service our vehicles, detail them. We do all of that good stuff. So like, we are competing with somebody who might be selling a car for 15 grand. But really, with what we've put it through, it's at 20 grand. So on the third party sites, they don't come up. So I have to be more creative than that. I either have to be really good at Facebook, LinkedIn, email campaigns. So it's using those resources to break through the noise instead of just relying on third party sites.
So the next question is kind of to piggyback off that, but because there are so many dealerships out there, and obviously you're dealing with a lot, and you've got to compete with all of them, like everybody, OEM, everybody. So differentiation is so crucial. So on that note, what strategies are you implementing there to break through the noise and distinguish yourself away from that like super crowded marketplace? Like, especially like, you think third party, man, that's a big thing for you to like have to battle that on top of everything else. You're battling third party. So what else are you doing to break through the noise?
So yeah, really a big thing that we're doing is spending the time taking the pictures of the vehicles. I cannot tell you how many dealerships are not taking that time to spend a little bit of extra money to get their vehicles merchandised properly and then pictured correctly. I have people who will watch just our website or just click on our stuff because it's the most appealing. And I'll even be picturing commercial vehicles like cargo vans, where it's like your kind of your standard or expectation for a van is relatively low. So when these guys who are business owners see something that doesn't look like it's going to break down when they drive it off the lot, they are a lot more willing to come in, visit us. They're more likely to do the test drives and purchase from us again and again. So that's been the biggest one to do the differentiation, and then branding across, like in all of my pictures, having good displays across the pictures, using really good color schemes. And then the Google reviews has probably been our biggest. When I talk about email campaigns being successful, we have almost 1,000 Google reviews at this point. When I started, there was 100. So if your sales guys and your service team are not asking for Google reviews, you're just throwing away money, because people all the time will be like, well, I saw your Google reviews, and they'll allow us to ship them a vehicle across the country. So, that takes away us just being able to service the local community. We have customers throughout the United States that we ship about 20, 25% of our vehicles every month out of the state of Florida. So, and we wouldn't be able to do that if we just relied on the traditional marketing schemes that you see in car dealerships. We have to break through the noise even in other markets. But that's also with going from the very beginning, buying the correct type of merchandise that's going to set you apart from other people, especially in the used market.
Oh yeah. And the fact you pivoted and said, hey, we're going to do, I mean, I've been on your site. They're very, unique's a good, I guess, word I'd use, but it's not your, like you said, it's not your typical used car dealership or independent dealership. It is, you guys know your market. And then from there, like the Google reviews, like that is something that still drives me bonkers when I see, hey, maybe there are reviews, but you refuse to answer them, or you're letting a third party answer them. That's just a canned response, or whatever it may be. And that's good. You are answering them. And it's good that you're asking for them. Understand, when it's not personalized, when you don't respond, when you don't keep that Google business profile up to date, you are losing SEO rank, like local SEO. Google is very, very canned about this, that right there makes such a difference. And I have seen stores that, from their service listing is outranking a Pep Boys. I've seen the sales that are, I mean, so there's, and same with the parts, like there's on the sales side, once again, either manually ask for it, which I would say work smarter, not harder, get something to ask them for those reviews for you, and then keep them coming. But make sure, the other thing I see a lot with, and I don't know what the store, do you have just one person answering reviews, or is it multiple people?
So typically the owner has been traditionally, but now that we kind of are a partnership and there's three of us now, we kind of have all taken, it's a little bit different when you do become a partner, because like you do take on a lot more of like an ownership role, where like you do communicate differently. You're able to say certain things that I feel like as maybe a salesperson, or when I was in the marketing director role, I wouldn't necessarily do. So now it's kind of a collaborative. We kind of see as they come in, and we're really, I remember everybody's name. I could tell you what they bought. So I like to really answer them too, because it can be much more personalized.
Oh, I agree. And I see these big dealerships, they're selling a ton of vehicles, and then they'll have a group. So each store that compiles, and they'll have one person answering reviews. I go, that person can't stay up with it. You should have minimum one person at each store answering it, because otherwise you fall into the trap of, I'm not going to say complacency, you're overwhelmed. And so you don't get that personalized response. Not every single person's getting a response. You're not having sales, service, and parts listing getting responses. And it shows, it comes through, like when I go and look at something, I see there's a, you know, it's less than 4%, or I'll say it's 4 stars. You'll go through and say, okay, why is this? Because you're going to have those bad apples that just decide they want to watch the world burn and just blast you. Like those are going to happen. But how is the dealership, how is the business responding to those bad reviews? Once again, is it a canned response every single time? Are they actually caring about what they do and taking pride in what they do and saying, no, let's fix it, let's do this. Hey, this, you know, it's just, it's very interesting to see, especially for me, like I look at this all the time to see how reviews are answered. And if they're answered, that's a whole other thing. But yeah, to me, that it speaks volumes when a business takes the time to personalize those responses. Like, you can still have the template idea of this is what I'm going to say, but still, please just personalize it. Please personalize it.
Yeah. And so, that's a really big one too. Cause I feel like with the reviews, it's really even figuring out how to harness some of the third-party sites reviews. Cause like fighting Google is kind of an uphill battle to figure out the SEO, how to rank, how to do all of that stuff. And it's so many different aspects that you need to be ranking on in order to show up. So, if you can even use somebody who specializes in the SEO or can analyze it or look it over, use a consultant like you to kind of go in and look at a different perspective, because now as I grow out my team, there's a lot of different things that maybe I missed or could be better moving forward, which is fabulous. You don't want to hit the top and never keep improving. But with everything that's constantly changing, you can constantly keep improving.
Amen. It is. And it's a constant battle. And Google just released a new SEO algorithm, which is going to blow everybody up, to be honest. And it's going to be rough for a little bit here when you're looking to say, okay, can I bring someone else on or have someone take, I mean, I have lost count on the number of times either the UTM tag has fallen off the Google, so whatever URL we have going on, or we go on and we change something. I just randomly lose access to things. Like, it just happens. So really having a second set of eyes is really, really beneficial, because I've told the story multiple times, and I just had it happen just this last week, where some random, the business's profile merged into a completely different business, not even in the same industry. It just, things like this happen. You have to constantly be looking to say, and I had one that the pinpoint was, it said the correct address, it had it a mile away, and it was just Google. They're like, well, there's nothing we can do, but you can submit a ticket. I go, you're Google. How can you not fix this? if you just have to always be looking at that to say, hey, has something changed? To be looking at those. So you've done a really, really good job with finding your niche and knowing that, hey, this is where we want to go. My question is that, how does that now, that discovery, shaped your marketing efforts?
Yeah, honestly, once we really took the vision and the excitement from the owner when I came in, and then obviously everything was crashing down March of 2020 when it was time to really create the marketing strategy, but it was breaking it down to the very basics. Okay, this is what we have. These are our vehicles that we have. This is the market that we want to be going into. Where do we market them, and how much money do we really have? So we only wanted to spend a certain amount per vehicle, but at the very beginning, we sometimes had to spend a little bit more while we grew our inventory. So we would be posting on Craigslist and Facebook and going back to like an older way of doing things that were really cost effective. So we learned how to be really good at Marketplace and really good at Craigslist, because that I kind of had somewhat control of how much we were spending, because these third party sites, they have sometimes a month to month, sometimes a yearly contract for what it is for you to have, say, 30 or 50 vehicles listed on Auto Trader or Cars.com. So I had to go through, kind of pick some of my best ones and kind of just say, we have to at least start showing up on these sites. If we're not even going to try, there's no point of even doing it. So I kind of went through, found the top 5-6 third-party sites. We went on there. But now it's like, even spending time, you spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. It's trying to figure out how that space also relates to, we started doing convertibles, and then we started kind of switching over to commercial vehicles. And then we learned that we had to market differently to commercial vehicles. A lot of people were using Craigslist again when I kind of removed that budget from it. It's kind of funny going back to the very beginning, because I even used Craigslist as our campaign to sell vehicles out of state. I was like, okay, we're having a hard time reaching all the people in Southwest Florida. How are they going to find us? I started posting in like Chicago, St. Louis, and we would have people call in to us and they would ship the vehicle up to them. So it's being really creative. It's not about not having enough resources. It's not being resourceful enough. So if there's a will, there is a way. That I've found with it. But sometimes it's also our pricing strategy for some of the stuff. We had some of these vehicles listed extremely high that we bought in April of this past year. And that was no longer the market. The market dropped out between April and throughout the summer, that yes, we were buying vehicles for a certain price and selling them at a certain price, but that wasn't the market anymore. So it's trying to be able to pivot as a company to also be able to, if we're not getting any leads on these vehicles, maybe that's not what the market is. It's not just what we paid for these vehicles, but it's what they're worth on the marketplace. We can hold inventory for 180 days and just say, oh my gosh, why is it not selling? Or we can get in the times, sell it and refill the inventory with vehicles that are now at the correct price. So it's kind of knowing the risk benefit analysis of when to keep and when to sell and when to hold your profits and when to kind of turn your inventory. Because aging inventory, it's just a cost. It gets stale. It's just kind of gets passed over. So it's also trying to incentivize those vehicles being purchased and not getting old. But yeah, from using strategies in third-party sites, but also all of the social media that people aren't using social media to really hone in on the people and target. No. I've seen Facebook ads do really well for us, but not to try to get leads, but more for like the brand awareness component. So then when they are ready to buy vehicles, they think of us. And then lastly was we also decided to spend more money during season down in Florida to do radio advertising. So you kind of think some things are outdated. Or you kind of think, oh, we should spend everything on Google or we should spend everything to really get our search rank up. But our Google went crazy after we did a really good radio ad. And we had more people on our website than we had from any of our Google ads that we ran, any type of blogs I was putting out. The radio advertising was super beneficial.
God, that's the thing. Like, I love hearing that because that is so often we jump, hence the name of the facts not feeling. We feel that something's going to work. We feel this. I'm like, well, go look at the facts. Cause I've told the story before where I was in a Cadillac store and they were spending, again, this was like 2009, 2010, like that. And they were spending so much, they were spending an exorbitant amount on newspaper. And I just go, hey, I can't see the data on this. Is this working for you? You know, and then when I saw that the median age was like 92, I was like, okay, yeah, it makes sense now. But really the same thing goes with radio. I cannot tell you the number of times where I work with clients or have my friends that are spending a ton in radio. And it's because it is so, the ROI is off the charts for it. So really understand it. And then like during 2020, it was a little different because people weren't driving as much. So they backed it off a little bit, but understanding like that transition. So I'm loving to hear how you guys are constantly pivoting. You're staying current, you're staying relevant. And my question is going to be like, just transition a little bit here, is that could you share how this approach has influenced one of your most successful marketing campaigns?
Yeah, we did. All of this has kind of brought us to, we're targeting more in the niche of business owners now. And we sell a lot of like cargo vans, transit vans, utility boxes, all that good stuff. And when we started to kind of pivot that way, I decided to create a radio campaign, kind of also match it with Facebook and we did two contractors talking to each other and just kind of talking about the experience in the auto industry, how they've gone to a lot of big chains or they've had terrible experience or got screwed in purchasing a vehicle. And so we used that and we used how then they were coming to Mint Motors and we created an entire script and we kind of branded it throughout all of our marketing campaigns. So like even the email campaigns coupled with the radio, coupled with Facebook, that was our most beneficial and one of our busiest months that we've had when we kind of created a storyline that people could be like, yeah, I have been to a car dealership and didn't get a good deal or the vehicle broke down when I drove away. So we were trying to make light of, this is the reality for a lot of people. A lot of people come in to buy a vehicle with their guard up. They know either they've had a bad experience or their parents have. And so now it's kind of like, yes, we know that's happened, but let's create a new narrative for that. And that's been kind of what we tell the storyline all the way through with all of our branding and marketing, is we address that up front. We say, you don't have to trust us. We're just used car salesmen. But it kind of breaks through and makes you kind of build connections with people and they laugh. It's like, you guys are business owners. We're business owners. We're just trying to give you the best possible experience in the best vehicle. So it kind of helped bring our brand full circle when we did that campaign, because it was, witty, it was funny, and it allowed people to really see our personality. Whereas before, you obviously have to be extremely professional with what you create and what you put out there. But if you're trying to compete with people who already do that, you have to have a differentiation that's associated with you. So like, we love to tell the story that we're a family owned, we're a veteran owned dealership that isn't like the same one that's right down the street from us, or you're going to get a way different experience than you get at any of the new car dealerships down the street. So when we kind of had everybody buy into really our vision from the branding, the marketing and sales, it's been super successful to move our sales forward and to move our business forward.
And you're talking about differentiating here. And all I can think right now, I don't know if you caught the episode with Brian Ortega. He's with Valley High Toyota. And they do such a phenomenal job. Like, you know, like people, we kind of just like wait for the next, I'll call it episode, but it's the next commercial that Brian's putting out. I was seeing something this morning online on LinkedIn. And it actually happens to be the same song that I have. When you go, this show doesn't happen on the live show, the Furnace Fast Lane that we do on Fridays at noon central. There's a whole BZ consultant, a little song that goes. And I'm like, wait, I'm like, I know that song. Like, how do I know that song? He's like, oh, Brian, that's Nathan from BZ Consultants Group. That's who it is. He's like, Brooke, I did that 6 years ago. I go, well, maybe I took it from you. But he does such a phenomenal job of just having fun. Like, there's his content is one, it does it very well, but it's because it resonates. Like, you can poke fun at yourself. You can laugh at yourself. The outtakes are usually the best part. And everyone sees a very polished, incredible, Oscar worthy performance by Brian and Toyota Todd. When it comes down to it, people don't understand the hours behind the scene of us screwing up the lines every single time. Like, I have more pictures of me like trying to do something. I'm like, F-bombs like crazy because I got it wrong again. And those are usually the best ones. Cause like, you're having fun. Like, and it, like you said, it takes the guard down and understands that, hey, we're all human at the end of the day. Like, let's just try to make it a better world and get you a car in the process.
Well, and that was a big thing too, like that we're all human. A lot of these people, like, we have become friends with. Our clients have then become people that we've gone out to dinner with or invited over to go out on the boat. And that's the type of experience that like we really try to take in from the very beginning, from the branding, marketing, and then into the actual experience that they have with us. It's really interesting to see the differentiation when you talk to them like they're human, not just a checkbook. And when you really look at people, I talk about sales books all the time that I love, but like we always do a lot by Tom Hopkins, Master the Art of Selling. But a lot of the ways that the influence, the Dale Carnegie's book of influence people and make friends. It's even just like when you're talking to people, just get to know them too. Like when you answer the phone. Yeah. When you answer the phone, we kind of have a little script that you do, but it's really to just have them bring down their guard and to be able to just kind of talk with you and kind of see you as a person too. Cause it's very interesting. My mom even worked with us for a period of time before. So we were definitely like, all hands on deck family operation, especially at the beginning of the pandemic. So it was interesting to see because my mom has her doctorate. I'm working on my doctorate now. And like, it's kind of funny because I never expected to fall into the car industry. And now I never want to leave. And I
plan welcome to the car industry, my friend.
So it's great to see the different perspectives, but it's them taking certain things that other people have done successful, applying it to your own, but then also creating the holes and the gaps in the knowledge that other people didn't really garner in order to make great change. So you can kind of see where those gaps are and you can then do better. So it's really interesting.
It is. And it's always, there's so many people, myself included, that literally fell into the industry. Like my background is the medical field and I ended up in automotive and we're going on 14, 15 years of this. And I absolutely love it. The same thing, like it's such a good industry and there are some incredible, my lifelong friends are in this industry. Like I lost count. Like while I know a lot of people, the people that I hold close are all in the automotive industry. And if it wasn't for this industry, I wouldn't know these people and my life is forever better from knowing them. Like, I hear about people that have gotten out of the industry, but I'm like, I don't know how you got out. Like one, kudos, I guess, Matt. But two, I was like, I don't know that I could. One, also, I have a sailor's mouth, so there's only a few places I could probably go with my mouth. Let's be honest.
I love it.
But And it's cool that your whole family was there. So we talked at the very beginning, like, hey, you have access to really anything you want. You're not strapped to say you have to have this product, this service, this blah, blah, blah. So when it comes to the technology and everything that you all do, how have you at Mint Mortars taken that, harnessed that technology to enhance your marketing strategies, particularly compared to the larger franchise dealerships?
Well, because the really big thing from the very beginning was when I would look at other people's websites and the vehicles that they were posting, I said, I don't know a lot about the car industry, but I wouldn't want to buy that car that has a blurry picture and it's like three pictures and I don't know what's going on. So I said, let's start there. Let's start at getting a nice camera. I've even used my iPhone for certain things. And let's just start taking pictures that show all the components of it, that have nice lighting. We're in Florida. Let's go take it and let's have a background that's palm trees. Let's do something.
Not snow.
Right. Exactly. So people, especially up in the Midwest, they would call down to us when it would start to get close to summertime, and they'd say, oh, like the blue sky and the palm trees, and you're kind of setting the stage for them to feel the emotions that you want them to feel. It's exciting. A lot of purchases are, we say facts, not feelings here, but a lot of times people will buy vehicles based on emotions. So we all know the buyer's remorse and all that, but they're buying it. Sometimes they do their research, they find you, but then they're buying because they feel a connection to it. They want that vehicle, especially you're looking at a nice BMW or a Mercedes. They're excited to get that shipped up to them just in time for summer. So a big thing with that was like, let's figure out a way to evoke emotions through what we're posting online. And then we'll go from there and we'll try to find people as individuals. So I have to be most cost effective, but like, let's start on the things that have worked for many, many years. Craigslist, people have put stuff on Craigslist for many years. It's still part of my marketing budget. And then even with like Facebook, I was like, this allows me to post free content. Sometimes I'll boost the stuff. It gets me interacting with people who have maybe been on our page before or are in our area. And then another thing was we started spending time trying to build relationships within our community too, going to like the business development groups and trying to really put our name out there and build the relationships in order to build out that marketing strategy that once we got a little bit more money and now I have a budget that I manage for my vehicles and I have my partnerships that work where I'm really trying to get a certain amount from Car Gurus every month or Carfax. But I'm trying to also analyze what are the best ones. Is it phone calls? Is it emails? Yada, yada. Obviously the person that calls in or shows up at your showroom is going to be the best customer and deserves all of your time and recognition. And that's what I try to convey to the guys all the time and my employees is that the person that's standing in front of you or calling into our dealership, they're not calling in to buy a glass of milk. They're calling in to buy a vehicle or they're showing up to test drive a vehicle to buy a vehicle. So definitely kind of changing the mentality of making marketing really speak well to our sales and having a good sales process has made us even need less marketing, if that makes sense. Like our conversion rates are so high that then we don't need to spend as much money on the back end. We can be spending our time talking to our previous customers, creating workflow calls to be thanking them a year later, to be seeing if they want to trade in 2 years later. And just it's now that it's been about 4 years, it's really interesting to see how the workflows have changed because like now we have a much bigger clientele base that if we're not touching them or trying to talk to them and stay in front of them, we're going to lose them. So that's my biggest advice too, is once you have them, you've already paid to acquire that customer.
Now, thank you. Yes. Yes. It's anywhere from 5 to 10 times more to acquire a new customer. And yet you get bombarded in our industry with people saying that, hey, we've got the greatest tool to acquire customers. We don't have a problem acquiring customers. Like that's not the problem. The problem is keeping those customers. And right now in 2024, and we're going to see in 2025, that the loyalty, brand loyalty has just plummeted. So the fact that you're on the other direction just says that, hey, I'll use my friend, Stephen Apicella, his connect the disconnected here. We know that once they buy the car, that is just a small portion. Now, I get it. In our industry, we glamorize this. That's the end all be all. It's the service. It's the retention. It's what are we doing after that to understand where the customer is versus just like, oh, they stroked a check, we're good to go. No, that's, do you really want to keep paying for that every single month? Like, I don't want to be. I want to continue to make sure that my clients and my customers, that they're happy, that they're seen as a person and not a dollar sign and a number. Like, when we've all been there, whether it's in our industry, another industry, you walk in and customer service is just, that's another one that's just not non-existent this year in our society. But when someone gives you that attention, that you feel heard, that people are, they understand you, like, man, I'll pay more for that every single time. Like, that's not a question. I'm going to pay more for that because it's so rare now to have that. It does, like, that, the ROI to keep that customer, there's no pro con to this. Like, there really isn't. It's all pro.
100%. And it's giving that attention and keeping them. It honestly, like, we just started back up our auto repair shop. And so, like, we had kind of one before, and then we're like, okay, now we're actually really going to do this. And that's going to be extremely important with, like, all of our fleet customers who have bought 8 to 10 vehicles from us. And it's, like, so important that then we provide really good customer service for them and that they're satisfied all throughout the entire way. And it even leaves opportunity to be able to have them trade in vehicles down the road. Mm-hmm. And then we buy them back and provide some more. It's really interesting to see, because for a period of time, like, you have to find what that percentage is that people are willing to pay more for that mm-hmm. experience. Because when we saw everything drop off in April and the prices change and the market change, we really had to resituate our pricing structure and sell out our inventory almost at cost, most of them at cost, to then mm-hmm. refill our shelves. And the last 6 months have been some of the best for us. So we're really happy mm-hmm. that the automotive industry feels like it's starting to stabilize a lot more than it was a year or two ago. But because our prices were so high, we were seeing that we were losing some customers. And it mm-hmm. was kind of like, that was the light that switched on in our head. Cause we're like, they've bought 8 vehicles from us. What do you mean they're going somewhere else to buy? And they're now asking us a question about a filing fee or something by somebody else. And I said, that comes down to a pricing thing. So we're just are too high. So it all works together, because in order for us to stay open, we need to be making a profit, but we also need to be competitive, or else you're just going to have inventory that sits and nobody makes anything. So,
and I want to applaud you all, because there are a lot of businesses out there that have forgotten that cars are metal. Like, they're just a piece of metal, and they get so attached to that piece of metal that it's, well, I bought it for this, so it's got to be worth that. Well, no, it's whatever the market bears is actually what it's worth. Like, that, whatever the customer is willing to pay for it, that is what it's worth. Now, profit is not a dirty word. We need profit in order to stay afloat and to run a business. There is definitely a line to say, okay, is this, are we falling in love with this metal so much that we're just going to sit on it for 200 days, 250 yeah. days, and then you sell it for $1,000 profit, let's say, and you're like, oh, I'm like, no, you lost money. It has been sitting on your showroom floor, your floor plan for almost, we'll say, 3 months. And you think you made a profit? No, you. So I just applaud you all that you're like, hey, cut, get out of here, sell at cost. Let's wipe this slate clean. Cause that is taking the ego out of, which is, it's, and it doesn't matter what business it is. That is not an easy task. So I applaud you all for doing that. Congratulations.
We watched some in the industry literally close their doors because they couldn't take it. Yep. But we made that decision quick enough to be like, we have 40 vehicles in inventory. We own these way too high. We're getting our leads, but it's like a fraction compared to what they're worth. Because if the other people down the street are selling the same exact vehicle for $7,000 less, I don't care how great your pictures are. I don't care how many Google reviews you have. It's not worth that. It's interesting because it's research intensive. It's knowing your market, but it's also providing an experience and providing marketing and we do virtual test drives and stuff on vehicles. It's just finding how can you provide more value to the customer, because they'll buy when the value exceeds the price every time. But it's how do you really create that, and what value is even your customer service and stuff worth when you're competing against somebody who might be selling it for $10,000 less? So it just required us to change a lot in the market, but it made me more proficient in my craft too. Like I had to be more effective in marketing and get more creative because you get complacent with marketing. You're like, okay, this works. So I've posted this so many times, I've done this. But if you do that, you'll all of a sudden then where are your leads? You're down that month on sale. So it's just never get complacent. Always be trying to do better on how you're spotlighting vehicles, what campaigns you're running, and maybe even trying out new sites that come up. Like we use this site called Convoy through like Work Trucks or something. And I had never heard of them. They're not Car Gurus. They're not Auto Trader. But it's also given us multiple leads over the last couple of months. So nice. Sometimes you got to try stuff and spend a little bit more money to be able to test out whether or not it works.
Amen. And I meant to say this earlier and we got caught up talking about everything else. And I just want to reemphasize that you have as well, that how insanely important photos are. I mean, that's one thing that I personally look at all the time to say, do you even have photos on your third party sites? Cause you're going to sit there and go blast the third party site. And yet you only have 70% of you don't 70% of your vehicles have photos. That's it. And those are, I'm not saying those are good photos. That's just photos in general. But we all know when we go and look at photos, we also know that I'm a massive sneakerhead. So if I go and look at something and it's a crap photo, I'm just going to quickly scroll off. Like I want to be able to touch and feel and experience whatever that product is. And when it's your second biggest purchase, why are we chintzing out on photos? Like, yes, they're expensive. So is the car. So find a way to have the best photos possible because it makes a massive, there have been so many studies on, you know, the type of photos, if they're photos, there's more than X amount of photos, the video, all that. Once again, there's no pro con to this. It's if they're not good photos, your car is not even being seen, especially let's say you're going up against Mint Motors and they've got just kick-ass photos and an 8x10 glossy of them. Why would I want to go anywhere else? Cause I'm going to get stuck right on yours. So I just want to make sure I just talked about that a little bit. Cause that is something that's a little bit near and dear to my heart. So I want to talk about, get your little crystal ball out right now. And you're looking at the trends, you're looking at technologies. What are those two, I'll say either of them, what do you anticipate will play a significant role in automotive marketing when you're looking at the future?
Well, so obviously taking the photos has been a big thing. And there now are different opportunities to kind of like streamline that process too. And people who are actually specializing in that. So it's taking, you only have so much time as one person or as a team. So it's figuring out who can you pay and be most effective and productive with your time too. So sometimes it's worth subcontracting out. I personally do all of the photos, but also the other trends is using AI. I was at a point where I needed to hire an assistant and I didn't hire an assistant and kept the money instead of hiring one because I was figuring out how to use AI templates to be able to create YouTube scripts that we were using to be able to create a baseline for workflows and all the things that were really, really tedious. I was able to kind of write what I was really trying to create and then be able to use AI in order to better that. And it's helped marketing, it's helped branding, it's helped even with the creativity component of it all, because sometimes I'll just type into AI and kind of hear back a response like, how would you take this? Would you experience this? What do you think this tone is? And asking those types of things. So I think if somebody who does marketing in this industry isn't figuring out how to be very proficient in AI, you probably are paying for too many people. I don't want it to ever replace jobs. I think they'll just become specialized in other things. But I've spent so much time now trying to take classes and figuring out Google to use that because I've never been able to outsmart Google. I never will be able to outsmart Google. But it's figuring out how to use the skills that Google is willing to show you to use and then learning from the people who specialize in the SEO, who specialize in certain things that might not be the best to have in-house. It may be better to have somebody who has a different lens, who's watching algorithm changes on Google, who are watching changes on what your organic search is producing, and knows how to also look through the analytics and be able to tell you what's working and what's not working. Without that, and I really think that the future is definitely going to take a lot of that and make it even easier to purchase vehicles across the country. It already has. We've seen the Carvanas of the world. We've seen them do stuff really right. We've seen them do stuff really wrong. But I just think that the technology of how it's taking is your customer base. It's not just the people in your community anymore. It could be a nationwide thing. And if you seize the opportunity, opportunity and use the technology of DocuSign and being able to fulfill those orders and get it to them quickly, I think that that could make it way more proficient than just having the few thousand people around you.
Yeah. And anytime we all go to the Amazon experience, we go to the Apple experience, Chick-fil-A, but all that, when it comes to Amazon, like before we ever got on, before we hit record here, yeah, I go, oh, I just need to hurry and buy something. So I was able to get what I needed and pop off in less than 60 seconds. Like, we all want more time in our life. Like, that is, we will all pay to have extra time in our life because you can't get more hours in the day. It's the fact I can quickly go on, get what I need, and then hop off. And then Amazon will serve me up and like, hey, you should probably buy this too. I probably will buy it, but I also know it's going to be here. I mean, the whole experience is, and I know that gets thrown around a lot, but there's a reason for it. It's the first $1 trillion company. So there's a reason why it's working so well. And I know that I'm not always paying the cheapest for Amazon. Rarely am I paying the cheapest unless I'm doing like the subscribe and save. I'm rarely paying but I'm paying for that convenience. And the fact that when it comes to a car, like, I don't have to spend 7 hours at dealership. Like, I love our industry. Don't really want to be spending 7 hours to finalize paperwork, because that does not sound fun at all. So having that ability to make the process better, to do the, obviously within the laws of your state, that's another thing there, but understanding, how can I make this experience better? If I can't do a wet signature, hey, we can 90% of it here. Or just once again, turning that, the transparency and the keys to the car, in essence, over to the consumer, that they can see, man, I can actually go through this. I can add my trade. I can add this. I can add this. But what I will caution with that is, If I order all my chai tea latte and I order it on Starbucks, I get to Starbucks and Starbucks goes, you know what, you need to go stand back in line. But I already placed my entire order. So why do I need to do that? But yet we do that all the time with our digital retailing tools, because either that's the process, or we don't know we can do this, or we don't have a product that is up to our people and processes, not sure what the plural one is there, but really looking at that and say, are we making this experience and making this so much harder? The customer's just gonna be like, screw this. Like, I'll just go down the street. I'm gonna go to Mint Motors. They're gonna make my life a whole lot easier. So really looking at that and saying, where's the fall off? Cause that's a whole other topic, but it's definitely something that keeps me up at night, of the whole process situation on these tools to make them better. But are we actually making it better, or just making it more convoluted and more pulling out our hair and stress for our consumers? I don't know. We'll see.
Those are pinch points too, that I think when I came in, I hadn't worked in the automotive industry before. So I almost had these fresh set of eyes of being like, oh, well, why don't we just do this? Or why have you guys been doing it like this for so long? So like a big thing is focusing on add-ons too, for like whether sales and marketing, but like we created like a white glove concierge. So like within 50 miles from around us, we would just deliver the vehicle to your house. So you didn't have to come in. So like during COVID, the first 2 years, people did not want to come to a dealership. So you have to figure out how do I show videos of these vehicles? How do I do virtual test drives? How do I get it to them without them having to come in? How do we create a little bit of separation, but make them feel comfortable and spending thousands and thousands of dollars? So like if a company isn't really thinking of how can I market this and what can I add on to kind of solve those pinch points, you're missing out on a lot of money, a lot of opportunities. Because like people kept asking us, hey, can you install shelves and bulkheads in our vehicles before we buy them? And we were like, no, we don't have that. And finally, a year and a half ago, we started doing that. And now that's one of our biggest profit centers is installing those. So they pick out their vehicle, they pick out their shelving. It's all installed by the time their employee comes and picks it up 2 days later. So it's figuring out how can you be better than the competition, but how can you also provide that much more value to the customer and solve all those pinch points that you talk about?
I'm ready to buy a car from Mint Motors. So my lease is up in nine months. So I'm like, man, the experience here is incredible. Like, I'm sure everyone watching and listening, like, well, Mint Motors, well, let's go check you out right now. Learn from Ashley.
It's being creative.
Well, it's creative, but also that feedback loop of whether it's the employees or the consumer to understand what is it that we need to do to make us better, which makes everything around us better. So freaking awesome. Well, Ashley, first off, it's been pretty fun in this conversation. We are at that point of the show where we are jumping the lightning round with Ashley DeBoer. So Ashley, first and foremost, for those that are watching, they can see your little QR code down here and your link down here, a personalized link, takes you to everything Ashley, everything Mint Motors. But for those that are listening to podcast land, How can they get in touch with you?
So, they can either head over to LinkedIn. My name's Ashley DeBoer. That's one place to go. And then I am running the entire page for mintmotors1.com. So feel free to either go through there or send me an email at ashley@mintmotors1.com. So feel free. I'm an open book. And I've enjoyed doing this. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's right back at you. It's a little bit of a love fest now, but yes, I very much am enjoying this. So the name of the show is Facts, Not Feelings. So whether it's in your personal life or it can be in your professional life, how are you distinguishing facts from feelings?
So a big thing is I journal so much. So I am constantly writing down, okay, these are some of the feelings that I've had. Are they real or are they not real? Which has really helped me decide that, okay, this might be an idea that I had, but after writing about this, these were just emotions that were running rampant. So that is actually not true. That's not the reality of what's actually transpiring, which if you don't write or journal, I'm telling you that makes a huge difference on being able to differentiate between the two. In an art industry, you know that you deal with a lot of stuff throughout the day, and it's probably good to get recentered that way.
Amen. And it's amazing, like even from the journaling standpoint, like what you'll learn about yourself, about others. And I was recently moving and like going through journals, I just go, oh my, first off, I was a baby when I wrote this, what the hell was I thinking? But at the time I was just trying to get those emotions out and figure out, okay, you know, whether it's a decision of whatever it may be, but it is very, very beneficial to be doing that. So, all right. So let's transition to, you are a superhero. So what is your superhero power, that if you could have any superhero power?
Oh, I feel like I would fly, because I could travel. Whenever I'm not working, I'm traveling. So if I could get to Europe and just flying really quick, I'd be happy.
Nice. I'm not just going to agree with that. Not hating that one. All right. So some of the community is newer to hearing about you and your amazingness, but I'll say just in general, what is something that most people wouldn't know about you?
Well, prior to being in the automotive industry, I was actually in Peace Corps. And I thought that my life goal was to like work in economic development in like underdeveloped countries. And that still is like a life goal. But I found that being in the private sector has brought me a lot of, benefits too, to be able to help more financially than versus time. So, but most people don't know that.
That's it. That was definitely the first one, the Peace Corps answer we've ever had in the show, hands down. But man, that's a pretty like nice little notch. That's pretty impressive there, actually.
Yeah. I said, yeah, let's do Peace Corps, and that'll set me up for the automotive industry.
You know, it makes sense. You know, the transitions we make into this industry, there's no rhyme or reason. You're just like, hey, it's a great industry. I'm in it now. I guess I'm staying here forever.
I live here now.
Ashley, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you again for reaching out. I already can tell that we're going to be contacting a lot in the near future. Like I just love interacting with you, learning from you. This episode has opened up my eyes to a lot of things. So I just thank you so much for being a part of it. I really, really appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you so much. I'll see you next time.
All right, everyone, you know the drill at this point. Find a way to serve today, whether it is opening a car door, whether it is just a kind smile. Do something that just brings a little bit of joy in someone's life and makes their day a little bit better. And with that, everyone, we will see everybody next week. You've been listening to Facts Not Feelings with Brooke Furness. Thank you for taking the time to listen. If you haven't already, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Leave us a rating. If you know a friend or a colleague will benefit from today's episode, share it with them. Until next week, find a way to serve someone. Find a way to help your neighbor. Remember, we are all in this together.